Hey, do you volunteer for or receive services from any of the hundreds of nonprofit agencies, community groups, and grassroots organizations in our region? Or maybe you're just looking for ways to help. If your favorite nonprofit is hosting a fundraiser or community building activity, or you'd like to find a nonprofit to support in your neighborhood, just go to our radio station website, hit the events tab, and find one, or discover some of the many causes supported by Connoisseur Media. I'm John Voquette, your public affairs director here at Connoisseur Media, and we'll be back to the award-winning For the People right after this news. Today, we're going to be looking back on National Consumer Protection Week, and we've got the right person for the job. It's Connecticut's Consumer Protection Commissioner. We'll be bringing you some important reminders about how to best protect yourself and the ones you love from scammers and situations designed to rip you off or steal your identity. Then we're going to work up your appetite with our friends from Jersey Mike's Subs. We're smack in the middle of Jersey Mike's Month of Giving, working our way toward the March 29th Day of Giving. So we're going to chat with a company representative about this effort and welcome Make-A-Wish Connecticut, which is going to be the recipient of all the Month of Giving philanthropy this year in Connecticut. And we're going to close saying farewell to Eric Jacobson, the soon-to-be departing director and conductor of the Greater Bridgeport Symphony. We're going to reflect on his journey over the past music-packed 9 years and hear about a couple of exciting upcoming performances, including his final performance with the symphony. And we'll learn what's in store for this talented musician in the months and years to come. We'll be right back with these segments and more on the award-winning For the People with me, John Voquette, right after this reminder. Formed all the way back in 1964, the St. Patrick's Scholarship Committee had a singular goal of providing a 4-year college scholarship to a high school senior from the greater Bridgeport region. Well, this scholarship is awarded on need and merit and provides $6,000 a year for 4 years of college. Historically, the main fundraising event is an annual black tie dinner with comedy entertainment held on the Monday before St. Patrick's Day. That means this year's dinner is going to be tomorrow, Monday, March 13th, starting at 6 p.m. at Vizzano's Four Seasons in Stratford. And it's not too late to get your tickets. All you need to go to stpscholarship.org and be part of the effort. Well, here we are at the tail end of Connecticut's Consumer Protection Week. Actually, it's a national initiative that is a significant focus of our guest this morning. We are talking with Connecticut Department of Consumer Protection Commissioner Michelle Siegel, who has been a guest on this program before and in other capacities. Michelle, you have really lent a great deal of your expertise and energies to the state of Connecticut. So on behalf of all of us here who have been the beneficiaries of you and your work and leadership and the teams that you have managed in Hartford, thank you.
Well, thank you, and thank you for having me on today.
So so looking back on the week as we kind of tape this near the end of it and play it on Sunday morning, there were a number of activities, and you were actually joined to announce some of these activities with your cohorts, the Attorney General and our friends at the Better Business Bureau. This is Consumer Protection Week is a nationally recognized initiative. What were your hopes and goals going into this week, and some of the things you hope to help consumers across the state of Connecticut become more aware of and help in ways that they can protect themselves?
Well, thank you. Yeah, this is a week, but it's really important for us, for consumers to always be vigilant. Certainly people who are scammers out there are not going to limit themselves to 1 week, but we like working with our partners, whether it's in the state, the Attorney General's office, Secretary of State, Better Business Bureau, to really focus and get everybody's attention on this and make a concerted joint effort to do that. And this is a week across the country where everybody focused on consumer protection makes those efforts. And so it's important for a couple of things. One, we always want consumers to recognize signs of a scam so that they know in advance and can start when they're in the moment realizing that something's a problem. And then with the, in partnership with the Attorney General, Secretary of State, and some others, we also wanted to remind businesses that they're not immune, that although it's Consumer Protection Week, businesses can be consumers too. And so we talked a bit about some of the frauds that they're seeing.
Yeah, I guess some of the disturbing aspects of some of these scams is that the scammers are actually utilizing government-branded emails and, espousing to be government representatives when they are trying to engage victims.
Yeah, and that's a really important thing for people to keep in mind, whether you're an individual consumer or you work at a large company, you own a small business, is that these scammers, they misrepresent who they are right from the get-go. So they're going to pretend to be an organization or somebody you know. So they may pretend to be reaching out with, you know, forms from the Secretary of State or claim to be from the IRS or Department of Revenue Services in Connecticut and telling you you owe taxes or you have to make certain filings. And so it's important to always independently verify that whoever you're talking to is in fact who they claim to be. And so that's really important. And similar with if you're a consumer, you may get a call and somebody's claiming to be from your utility company or that they're claiming to be from your bank and your identity was stolen and they're going to ask you for information. So it's always important when you get one of these phone calls or emails out of the blue, you didn't initiate the contact. The first thing to do is keep in mind scammers pretend to be somebody in an organization you would recognize. So independently find a way to verify that.
It's a little bit more challenging for folks who are not tech savvy when they get a text or an email that is dressed up in a way that looks quite official, and then doing that fateful maneuver of clicking on something or calling a number back that's in one of these correspondents, right?
Yeah, you're absolutely right about that. And it can certainly happen to the best of us where you're busy, you're not focused, you get this email or you get a text, it looks like it's from your bank, they say, we think somebody's, improperly accessed your account. Click here to reset your password or to verify whatever. And the spur of the moment, you click the link, and that's where now they've got you because they're maybe going to download malware. They're somehow using your clicking on that link to really fulfill their scam or their ability to steal your identity. And then it may, you know, go further where you click the link and now they're going to ask you to confirm your bank account number or give them your password or other information. And so the longer you remain in this sort of universe that they created through this fake link, the more they've got you. So it's really important not to click on these links. Make sure you're really confident it's from who it says it's from.
Yeah, and I guess the idea of the scammer being this sort of frumpy ne'er-do-well in a dark room with a phone, those days are over. Today, given the kind of the shrinking of the globe as we know it, thanks to electronic devices and means, these scammers are sometimes quite sophisticated when they get somebody to call them back, very well trained, very well equipped, and in many cases, they may not get away with a lot of money, but when you get $1,000 out of 5,000 persons, it starts to add up.
Yeah, absolutely. No, they're definitely sophisticated. You know, they're able to use technology. So maybe you get a phone call and the caller ID makes it is the name of your utility company. Maybe it'll be a government agency, but they're able to use technology to change that number. So again, you got this call out of the blue. Make sure you know who you're really talking to. Because the other thing they're going to do and to really be on the lookout for is they're going to pressure you to act immediately. So they're going to either tell you you've got a big problem and you need to address it now, you got to pay your bill or your taxes or something bad is about to happen to you. Or maybe the reverse side, you sometimes hear about these lottery scams and where you've got this great prize, it's waiting for you, but you need to act now. You need to pay certain fees, pay whatever to get this money. But whatever it is, there's something really bad or really good that you're going to miss if you don't act very quickly. And that's what they want to do, is not give you that moment to think about it and realize, wait a minute, this seems suspicious. They're going to have you on the phone, and they're going to scare you, and then they're going to pressure you to act immediately. And so those are the signs of a scam, where you feel like you're really, you've gotten this contact out of the blue, and you're being pressured to give money or to give personal information and to do it quickly. And in particular, when you're asked to pay money in a way where that you can't get that money back. Maybe they'll tell you to wire the money, or they'll tell you, go buy a gift card and read us the number on the back. Some way where once it's gone, it's gone. You can't go in and contest it later.
Yeah. Well, I know one of the other things, you know, one of the, all scams are nefarious, but when you're preying on the emotions of people, whether it be somebody calling to pretend to be a grandchild or a niece or nephew saying that they're in dire trouble and need money, or, you know, given the COVID era and the way that our social habits have changed, the proliferation of online dating and matchmaking has yielded a little bit of a uptrend in romance scams, right?
Yeah, so that's a big area that can be a problem, and it's really sad. They're really that's one where they're really preying on your emotions, and they'll go on and on. They're not with this. So with a romance scam, and it is harder now to meet people, and particularly these last few years where there's been less in person. A lot more people are going onto these apps, going online to find someone they can connect with, and often a hallmark in these scams, they will build that relationship. So they'll spend a fair amount of time on it, but then they'll never quite be able to meet you in person. There'll always be an excuse. And suddenly there'll be expenses. There's a medical emergency, and they'll want you to help with it. Or they really do want to visit, but they're, you know, in a different state, even a different country, and they need money for the plane ticket. There will be these constant things that are getting in the way of them visiting you and that require you to give them money. So you really need to be suspicious when you've just met someone online, you've never met them in person, and now they're asking you for money. And it's hard because they are very good at building up that relationship where you feel this connection. And this is a person you want to help. And if they need surgery or they've got, you know, a family member who needs surgery and you can help them, it's hard to resist and take that step back.
Another thing that has been of issue, probably more so over the past decade or so, is the owners of mobile devices are getting younger and younger, and it seems like every kid's got a mobile device now, and that opens up an entire new opportunity pool for the worst of the worst in terms of scamming or even taking advantage of these young people for extremely nefarious reasons.
You're right about that. It's and you know, people get their phones now fairly young, fifth, sixth grade. So these are elementary school kids who now have that phone, and they're on games and other interactive social media sites where they may get connected with people they don't know. So it's important to talk to your kids early and often about the fact that you don't really know these people. And I know it's certainly important to me if they're going to friend somebody, that it needs to be a real-life human person they know. It needs to be the kid on the school bus or on their sports team or something. And certainly that you don't want them, just like you would never give out information, you don't want your kid to give out information. And again, it can be slow and evolving, figuring out, hey, where do you go to school? What sports teams do you like? Until someone really can start building that relationship and figuring out who the person on the other end of the screen is.
Well, in the last few minutes that we have with you, Commissioner Siegel, once again here at the tail end of National Consumer Protection Week, in the media, obviously, individuals like myself get called a lot of times from friends, friends of friends, or even total strangers who have had a bad consumer experience with a product, a service, a company, and they want to know where to go. When it comes to the Connecticut Department of Consumer Protection, what are a few of the most important things you would like all consumers to know about how they can best utilize their taxpayer services at DCP, and when are the appropriate times to come to the Consumer Protection Department here in Connecticut for assistance?
You know, great question. So there's, you know, two broad categories where we see consumer harm. One is where you're dealing with a legitimate business, but the transaction didn't go the way you felt it should have. They didn't honor the contract. They're charging you extra fees. And so, you know, when that happens, certainly reach out to us. You can call us. We have toll-free 860-713-6300. Can talk you through it. You can file a written complaint to dcp.complaints@ct.gov. Give us the details so we can work to help resolve the problem you're maybe having with the business. Then the other larger problem, which is a little trickier to solve, is when you are contacted by someone, they're not in Connecticut, they maybe aren't even in the United States, it's a total scam, they're tricking you out of their money, and there's really nobody at the other end that can be easily found later. I mean, the best thing there is, again, know these signs of a scam. Visit our website. The Federal Trade Commission also has terrific information. Because the best thing is to just not give out money and not give out personal information. But if you feel that's happened, or maybe you get a call and you're just not quite sure, reach out to us and say, hey, I got this. Does this seem like a scam to you? And we can help talk you through that and be a sounding board on that. You can certainly then file a complaint if this happens. It's a lot harder in these situations to do that. To the extent you feel you've been a victim of identity theft, I actually recommend people go to the Federal Trade Commission, and they have a great service. Just do a search for identity theft. I'm walking you through the steps for how to recover your identity, how to cut off the harm.
Very good. Lots of great information this morning as we put National Consumer Protection Week in the rearview mirror as Commissioner Michelle Siegel of the Connecticut Department of Consumer Protection pointed out very early in this interview, while Consumer Protection Week may be over, scammers and those looking to part you with your hard-earned money are working 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. And National Consumer Protection Week and this program was a great way to help remind you folks all to review available resources from the Consumer Protection offices here in Connecticut, as well as partner agencies like the Attorney General's Office and the Better Business Bureau serving Connecticut. Commissioner Siegel, thank you so much for all your time this morning, and we will talk to you again soon. Thanks. Well, right around this time every year, we catch up with our friends at Jersey Mike's Subs and our good friend here at Connoisseur Media, Mitchell Thompson, who is working with a number of the Jersey Mike's Subs shops here in Connecticut. And Mitchell, have we got a ramp up, man? I'm telling you, I am a UConn Huskies fan and have been watching Danny DeVito to the point where I think I can almost repeat every single one of his commercials, and also not to sell the Super Bowl short, but man, you guys are working this month of giving in a real incredible way. So welcome to the program, and I'm glad we could help talk about it.
Hey, John, as always, thanks. We always appreciate our partnership and you helping us get the word out there. Yeah. It's funny, we just had our national meeting and Danny DeVito shows up and they're showing some of these new commercials coming out, and We're doing some A-plus work. Some of these commercials that are going to come out and land here in the next few weeks are going to have all of our customers pretty happy and laughing over.
Yeah. Well, I have to say, just because of my viewing habits, I don't watch a lot of commercial programming. So I am ignorant of the fact of where or how often Jersey Mike's has already been out there doing mainstream commercials. But it really seems like hitting big with the month of giving and the day of giving, incorporating the celebrity endorsement and bringing the boss onto the commercial and putting a name and a voice to the cause really seems to be adding up. I have to say, I think this is going to be your best month of giving ever.
Well, that's kind of trending. I know, last year, Jersey Mike's as a whole, every franchisee in the company partnered up with Special Olympics, and we were able to fund the whole event last year, most of it last year, raising $20 million as a company throughout the month of March, and have agreed to partner up with them again in Minnesota, 4 years down the line. But in the interim, all of us local franchisees get to kind of get local again and regional. And we've chosen Make-A-Wish here again in Connecticut, something, my group specifically has always felt really strongly about. And, we have 32 other restaurants in Connecticut who have all agreed to join on our mission to see what we can do for these kids locally this year.
Yeah. And folks should know, if they didn't hear it in the intro, once we're done talking to you and we take a little break, we're going to actually bring some leadership from Make-A-Wish onto the program as well to sort of show the cause and the effect of Jersey Mike's month of giving and day of giving. So this will be the 13th annual month of giving. Like I said, it'll be a lucky 13th. I think, because so many more people are talking about it. And as a result of our conversation last year, I was able to share the information with a number of friends whose entire offices got together on the day of giving and made these massive sub and wrap and sandwich orders from their local Jersey Mike's store. And I guess that's another kind of a growing thing that you want to make sure that everybody knows about. This isn't just a one person, one sandwich, one donation situation here. People can really parlay themselves together and make a massive difference.
Yeah, I mean, as in years past, all month long, we're matching some donations. Most of our stores, if you donate $5, you're going to get a free sub card. $3 gets you a free chip and drink your next visit. $1 gets you $1 off. And on the day of giving, the last Wednesday of the month, the 29th, 100% of sales goes back to our organizations. And, we encourage people to feed their offices that day, to, get together with the teachers and feed everybody. It's our busiest day of the year every year. We staff accordingly, and we do our best just to get as many bread out the door as we can. The more bread we get out the door, the more money we're going to be able to give to these charities, coming off the back of COVID and some shutdowns. And, last year with us going towards Special Olympics, I think it's really important that, our customers and your listeners support us this year so we can really make a big bang and really help get Make-A-Wish back where they were a couple of years ago pre-COVID.
Yeah. Well, my memory's failing me, Mitchell. Have you been with the company all the way back to year one or earlier, or have you come on a little bit more recently?
I've been on since year one of, the year of, or the day of giving and the month of giving. My first day was 1996, so 25 years ago, we started this thing out of my hometown in Wall, New Jersey, and haven't looked back. So it's been pretty special. The company motto has always been "Give to give." I know there's been this insurgence of, give for profits, but our CEO has kind of been leading the charge with "Give to give." It's been his mission statement since I started, and it continues to be. Over the past few years, we've really partnered up with Reese Across America, and Feeding America is another big thing we do. We donate 25% of sales 2 days every year to them as a company as well. So it's just kind of always been in our fabric, and now we're getting a little bit more attention for doing it.
Yeah, it's you know, in situations where it's a percentage, that's awesome, especially when you stretch it out over a long period of time. But it is still quite unique, no matter what industry you're in, where you're giving 100% of proceeds, and it's not just for an hour, not just during lunchtime. It's for the entire opening to close. On the day of giving coming up on Wednesday, March 29th, right?
Yeah, it's remarkable. It's, you know, and obviously our CEO, you know, pushes it, and but, you know, 2,500 locations open countrywide. We're about to open in our 50th state here in Alaska. And, you know, they really get us all behind it. Every franchisee, you know, jumps behind it and all agrees that we're gonna make this day, this month really special. And we're going to make an impact in our communities on a grand scale. You know, obviously we're always supporting our different students and teachers and local walks, whether it's, you know, cancer research or MS or what have you, but this is something we all do. We all come together. I mean, we prepare for it for weeks. And, you know, you mentioned kind of our Super Bowl and, you know, Wednesday the 29th is the biggest day. It kind of brings the most joy to all of our lives. And it really gets us ready for the spring and the summer business, and our whole crews get behind it, and we're decorating the stores, and it's a great team building experience, and they get to meet a lot of the families, you know, Make-A-Wish, and they'll talk to you about it. They send all, you know, recipients in future and past, and our kids and our you know, management just brings such a little bit of joy element, a little bit of kind of camaraderie, and it's really something we embrace and we look forward to every year.
Yeah. Well, Mitchell, before we say farewell to you and take a quick break and then bring in and meet some folks from Make-A-Wish Connecticut, let's just remind the listeners once again, because it's still a couple weeks till the day of giving on March 29th, where every Jersey Mike subs shop in Connecticut and across the country, wherever you're listening, is going to be giving 100% of their proceeds to charity here in Connecticut, Make-A-Wish Connecticut. But for the entire rest of the month, folks can still give and get at Jersey Mike's, right?
Yeah, we're really excited. As I mentioned, most, if not all, of our locations are matching donations. A $5 donation gets you a free regular sub. $3 gets you a free drink and chip, and $1 gets you $1 off. You also always have the roundup option. You know, it'll round your ticket cost up to the nearest dollar, all going to charity. Ultimately, leading up to our day of giving, where we put our money where our mouth is, and we do 100% of sales back to Make-A-Wish here in Connecticut, so many other worthy charities around the country. So, you know, please come out. You know, Wednesday, the day of giving, you're going to eat. We say it every year. You might as well eat for a cause, and really help support us and support some of these amazing young children who need a little hope this season.
Well, whether you're walking through the door or making a phone call, Jersey Mike's subs makes it easy to connect with your favorite food from their franchises. But they also make it even easier to do it on your mobile device with their Jersey Mike's app. I've got it, and I use it, and it's another great way to get some great food and stay connected with this organization. And you can always go to jerseymikes.com if you want to learn more about this company and their efforts and all the good work that, and the good food that they do at Jersey Mike Subs. Mitchell Thompson is with us again this year, reminding us about this month of giving and the upcoming day of giving on Wednesday, March 29th. So we hope everybody can get hungry and give through Jersey Mike Subs during this month and day of giving. Mitchell, we'll say farewell to you for now. We'll ask folks to stick around so they can meet and hear more about Make-A-Wish Connecticut, and good luck for the rest of the month, and especially for Day of Giving. Hey, do you volunteer for or receive services from any of the hundreds of nonprofit agencies, community groups, and grassroots organizations in our region? Or maybe you're just looking for ways to help. If your favorite nonprofit is hosting a fundraiser or community building activity, or you'd like to find a nonprofit to support in your neighborhood, just go to our radio station website, hit the events tab, and find one, or discover some of the many causes supported by Connoisseur Media. I'm John Voquette, your public affairs director here at Connoisseur Media, and we'll be back to the award-winning For the People right after this news. Hey, have you heard the Kennedy Collective Autism Project is partnering with Band Central to present Spectrum of Rock, an evening of amazing rock and roll music, joy, and fellowship. The event will be held at Park City Music Hall in Black Rock in Bridgeport on Wednesday, March 22nd from 7 to 10. Proceeds from the event will support the Kennedy Collective Autism Project, which provides opportunities for children, teens, and young adults to engage in social and recreational activities while learning skill-building strategies. If you'd like to help out the effort, just get your tickets now at parkcitymusichall.com. And to learn more about the cause, visit thekennedycollective.org. All right. Well, we've got you hungry, and now I hope we will inspire you to be hungry for the best of reasons. And that is because at least if you are making donations at Jersey Mike's or making any purchase on March 29th, you will be helping Make-A-Wish Connecticut and the great work that they do, restoring hope for tomorrow and giving joy for today. As in the past, our worthy guest and friend is with us on the line, Kim Smith. Kim is a representative of Make-A-Wish Connecticut. And Kim, it was really exciting to hear from Mitchell how all of his managers, all the way down to his newest part-time staff members at all of his stores, are so excited that the money that's coming through these Jersey Mike's sub stores is going to Make-A-Wish Connecticut. So we're happy to have you here to let folks know about the incredible work that you guys do. So thanks for joining me.
Excited to be here. Thank you so much. We're truly, it's a community effort in really engaging the community to come out and support us through eating these amazing subs and granting a wish at the same time. It's awesome.
Mm. So tell us a little bit about Make-A-Wish Connecticut and you know, how that sort of fits into the greater national or even global patchwork of the Make-A-Wish movement.
Sure. Well, Make-A-Wish, we create hope and grant life-changing wishes to children with critical illnesses. And through the power of the community and hope, it's a game changer for these kids. When they know the community is rallying around them, it just gives them that strength to fight the fight. They're hearing, you know, through the amazing messaging of Jersey Mike's, through their teams, through they're able to make a donation for stars throughout the month. And then the day of giving, 100% of all sales goes to Make-A-Wish to help wishes come true. These kids and families are excited. And it really has an impact on the wishes that we're trying to grant.
I think folks that may not be as familiar as you or I are, or many of the families who come to Make-A-Wish Connecticut are, so many of these wishes are very special, personal, private things. Everybody doesn't want to go to a major global theme park or the Grand Canyon or, you know, meeting Taylor Swift or what have you. A lot of these wishes that come through Make-A-Wish Connecticut are somewhat austere, but nonetheless special to the individuals who are hoping to get those wishes fulfilled.
Absolutely. Wishes come in all shapes and sizes, with the average cost of a wish being about $10,000, and that's quickly rising, just with what isn't rising nowadays. But with our wishes, like you said, they are all very unique to the wish child. And some of them are, you know, a treehouse. Some of them may be a little tool shed because they love to work with their hands and have a special place that they can call their own to make special projects. Like I said, they come in all shapes and sizes, and it's really unique to be able to meet with the child. And a wish is the time that a child can have their own voice and choice. Whereas when they're going through treatment or whatever it is that they're going through, a lot of it is what they're told what to do. But a wish is something that they can reach for the stars and just imagine, you know, what that one true wish is. And it gives them something to hold on to get through the battle that they're going through.
So that being said, let's remind people, because sadly, it seems like we all know a young person who's going through a hard time. Remind folks what the qualifying criteria is and who should or shouldn't be calling on Make-A-Wish in situations where they're trying to help connect a child to a dream they hope will come true.
Sure. So wishes come through a referral process, and it could either be the child themselves. It could be through a physician, through the hospital, through a nurse at the school, through the parents. It's not something that a neighbor would do the referral or provide a referral. And then we have a process that we follow to ensure that the child does have a critical illness. So we do go through kind of that that process. In terms of, you know, making sure the medical professionals do sign off and that they do have a critical illness at referral.
Okay. And at that point, what would the applicant anticipate having to do or how does this all happen for them?
Sure. So once they go through the referral process, and the ages that we serve are 2.5 to 18, to be eligible for a wish. And what happens is once we go through the referral process and, you know, there's always paperwork and everything we do, but once we have them, an actual wish grantor, we'll meet with them. And those are volunteers that we have throughout the state to meet with our family and sit down and really figure out what their one true wish is, because it's really important to get to the heart of the wish. That's so important for us that child does have the voice and kind of figuring out if they could have anything, what does that look like? So they're trained to be able to just meet with that child to figure that out. We call it a wish discovery visit and share with them that there are different types of wishes that fall into 5 categories. I wish to go, I wish to have, I wish to be, I wish to meet, I wish to give. So we have these categories, and it's a huge question to, if somebody says, if you could have anything, what would that wish be? It's a pretty difficult question. So we sit and go through them, and we have our new building, which is the Wishing Place. And we feel that for children that come through the Wishing Place, that it's a home for hope and healing, that there's so many different ways that we take them on this journey for them to figure out what their one true wish is.
Very good. Well, we want to remind people once again, any donations that you give through a Jersey Mike's sub shop in Connecticut or anywhere in the country will be part of their month of giving. In Connecticut, all of the donations given throughout the month and 100% of the proceeds on Jersey Mike's Day of Giving, March 29th, all going to Make-A-Wish Connecticut. If it's an organization you'd like to support above and beyond your sandwich fix at Jersey Mike Subs, you can go to wish.org/CT. And I want to thank Kim Smith from Make-A-Wish Connecticut for helping orient us to their latest efforts. Kim, thank you so much.
Before I go, I just wanted to let the entire Jersey Mike's crew know how grateful we are for their support. It takes a village to do what we do, and through their community efforts and just engaging their customers and employees across the state, we can't do this alone, and together we will make many wishes come through through the month of giving. So thank you so much from the bottom of my heart and all the kids in Connecticut. Thank you, Jersey Mike's.
So it's a bittersweet call this morning. We barely get to say hello before we have to say goodbye to my guest, Eric Jacobson. If you are a loyal or regular listener, you may remember our visit with representatives from the Greater Bridgeport Symphony last fall as we took the long view at the eventual departure of Eric Jacobson, who is the conductor and music director for the Greater Bridgeport Symphony. And as all good things must come to an end, so has Eric's tenure with this gig for now. And we have got him on the line with us to talk about the exciting conclusion of this chapter of his life, as well as to talk a little bit about what the next chapter may hold. Eric, welcome to the show. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. What a bittersweet time it is.
Yeah. So do I call you maestro? Is that the I hate to harken back to the Seinfeld joke, but
no. You know, I think Eric will do perfectly.
Good.
That's generally how it works. People do like the word maestro. It is a beautiful word, but generally speaking, I think I'm more of an Eric, maybe in the clothes of a maestro.
Great. And apologies to our listeners for that blast of Eric there for the first few moments of his interview. We just had the volume level turned up a little too loud. So if we blew anybody into the back seat, blew anybody into the back seat of their cars there for a second, it was all my fault. Okay. So Eric, here we go. As we heard, last fall, there was a brilliantly conceived series of guest spots on the bill for the Greater Bridgeport Symphony over the winter that served as sort of we wouldn't call them audition sessions, but an opportunity for the community and the patrons and the lovers of all things GBS to meet the possible future replacement conductor and music director. So first of all, let's remind them about that whole project.
Yeah, well, you know, it's been a pleasure for, you know, now 9 seasons getting to work with the incredible artists, incredible board, beautiful audience, beautiful staff of Greater Bridgeport Symphony. I mean, truly one of my favorite memories in my life will be the time spent with the artists and everyone that makes this orchestra happen. Mm-hmm. And I remember very clearly my audition week and the time that I spent with the orchestra, sort of figuring out who we are, smelling each other, learning each other. And, you know, this year and a little bit of last year, just sort of figuring out, you know, who might be the person that would, you know, continue the trajectory of the orchestra. And, you know, there's something very beautiful about pride, and there's something often terrible about pride, but for better or for worse, an amount of pride that I want the orchestra to be in the place that's better now than I found it. I want it to be in the place where if I had applied for the job now at my age, you know, 10 years ago when I
where
applied,
you'd want it to be,
I wouldn't
sure.
be. I would like it to be so at a place artistically and sustainably that, wow, they just need someone even, you know, more on their career trajectory and so on. So it just makes me so happy to see all these beautiful artists that are coming in to conduct. And, you know, I'm not going to be involved in any type of selection because that would be odd. But I feel like, you know, with the hands of the great board and the musicians and staff, I really feel, and audience, you know, everyone will find the right person to continue on the quest of bringing great live music, orchestral music to the Greater Bridgeport area.
Yeah, nobody ever wants to, be the replacement, so to speak, and to walk into the room with the person that they're replacing, to sort of shake hands and wish them well and turn their back for a moment, and when they turn back again, the door is kind of swinging as the departing person is running to the next thing. So that certainly wasn't the case here, and it has been a building season, and a lot of patrons and lovers of the Greater Bridgeport Symphony really got to hear a spectacular package of programs with some fantastic talents that have yielded a new director. Let's hear about that.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think what we've done programmatically in the last almost decade with different soloists, you know, as unique and varied as bringing, you know, the Persian master Kayhan Kalhor to perform with the orchestra, or Indian tabla virtuoso Sandeep Das, and things like that that are super interesting, and then American fiddler Jeremy Kittle, things like that over the last 10 years, but also, you know, having the greatest legends of the classical tradition, having Yuja Wang come and play Schumann concerto, having Gil Shaham come and play Beethoven concerto. This has been something that has, brought to life an energy within this group and on that stage and in that room, as I could hope, the greatest that I could hope, you know, just so much beauty and music making. And so, you know, I feel like so much of the next 10 years is really going to be carving out, you know, the new direction.
Yeah.
Because obviously whoever comes in is going to have to find their own path and create their thing with their friends and their colleagues and the people that they look up to and all those things. So
sure.
It's going to be that's so exciting.
Yeah. And you make a good point, Eric, because the difference between a true musician who is a musician in their soul and an entertainer who plays music is that the true musician not only is ecstatic to play with, but to learn from someone with even greater talent.
100%. 100%.
And you have certainly been able to provide your colleagues on the symphony with a rich program of musical mentors and colleagues to bring them to a whole new level, personally, professionally, individually, and collectively. So that's fantastic. So now on to the inevitable last show, which we really want to pack on Saturday, April 8th at the beautiful Klein Memorial Auditorium in Bridgeport. The 8 p.m. show will be your last, correct?
That'll be my last concert as music director of the symphony. You know, I have a feeling that over the, you know, course of the next couple of years, when the orchestra chooses whoever is coming in next, there'll be time for me to come back and do something. But yeah, it is the end of this moment. And how beautiful is that? I mean, there's something so beautiful about transition and change. It's devastating. We all, I mean, at least for me, maybe not for anyone else, but it's devastating because, you know, things have happened. Beautiful memories have been made. We've had challenges. We've overcome a lot of challenges. We've addressed lots of, you know, big picture ideas musically. Artistically, the group sounds so incredibly wonderful that I have been, you know, felt so confident to invite all these friends who are, you know, go around and play with the New York Phil and the Vienna Phil and so on and say, hey, come and play in Bridgeport. You're going to love it. And I feel like that's been such an important moment, at least in my life. And I hope it has touched people to some degree. And so I look forward to sort of having that memory of the last 10 years together. And yeah, that concert, you know, with Respighi, Pines of Rome, as the closing piece. It's a piece that I know that Gustav Meyer, my predecessor, someone who I studied with at one point, you know, loved and conducted. And I, you know, I think about him and I think about, you know, how building a group and organizing how it all works is such an important moment in one's life. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, that is my last concert, and it is the end of a chapter. And I know that there is a sequel. I know that there's more to come in this relationship, but it's going to be under a different, you know, a different understanding and sure. different type of relationship.
Yep. One of the things that we discussed in the prior interview in the lead up to our chat today, Eric, was yeah. the fact that under your leadership, the Greater Bridgeport Symphony has made its presence known out in the communities and in the region, perhaps more than ever before, not only raising up our youngest music lovers right by exposing them to the instruments and the music of the symphony, but also sharing this talent with folks in other communities. And while it will be nearly a month post-departure, or at least a month following your last show, we would love for people in the central and northwestern area of Connecticut to put May 5th on their calendar to enjoy a special concert in Danbury at St. Peter's Church. Were you involved in some capacity in that? Because it looks pretty good.
Well, yeah, that's going to be a wonderful concert performing, you know, one of the great masterpieces of the symphonic repertoire, the Sassans Organ Symphony. And of course, yeah, that organ, that particular organ in Danbury is really a treasure, and having the symphony go up there and play there. Yes, I remember talking about this concert 4 years ago, and I knew it was going to happen, and I'm so sad that I'm not able to do it. At the same time, what a great opportunity to actually see the continuation of the organization. And, you know, can't do everything.
Sure. And not just highlighting that beautiful St. Peter's Church organ with the 60-piece backing Greater Bridgeport Symphony players, but also, you know, the seasonal appropriate selection of Appalachian Spring and the fun of the Circus Polka are also on that bill.
Such a wonderful treat, and what a wonderful program.
Yep. So as you look toward the future, you are already engaged in some leadership roles in Florida and at Virginia. Is that right? Another symphony?
Yeah. So, you know, in the last years of being with Bridgeport, as conductors tend to do, we have various artistic outlets, because no matter what the size of a symphonic orchestra, there are so many extra weeks of weeks that you can't conduct as the music director, and it's good to have an orchestra that is able to see numerous different conductors and bring different artistic missions and messages and diversity to the podium. So for me, my musical life has spanned, you know, of course, in this year is Bridgeport. And I also, I'm the music director at the Orlando Philharmonic Orchestra and also the Virginia Symphony. And those are incredibly beautiful ensembles. And honestly, without the good nature and the spirit of Bridgeport, I'm not sure. I think I might have made poor decisions and ended up with orchestras that weren't the right fit. But I knew that being with Bridgeport taught me so much about, you know, relationship building with an orchestra. And I think that's why I ended up with these two orchestras that are truly in the beautiful spirit of music making, like Bridgeport. And as we were talking about earlier, I continue my work with the orchestra that I founded in New York City called the Knights. And we are so excited to be starting this residency in Carnegie Hall moving forward next season. So, I'm just, you know, the programs, the ideas, the concepts that are going to be in that series at Carnegie will follow the spirit and the trajectory of types of programs that I've been doing in Bridgeport for all these years. So I think people who have come to the concerts that I've been a part of in Bridgeport will kind of sense the style, or maybe even, you know, the type of brand of things that I like to, you know, put on stage. So it's just a continuation of that beautiful mission that the Greater Bridgeport Symphony has so clearly defined.
Well, after nearly a decade at the helm at the Bridgeport, Greater Bridgeport Symphony, you will be missed, Eric Jacobson, and we thank you for your service not only to the arts and culture of Bridgeport, but the entire region, and undoubtedly the hundreds of young people that you directly or indirectly helped influence to perhaps pick up an instrument and play, or at least go to see symphony music or classical music or something besides pop music, and to hopefully broaden their lives and introduce them to a broader level of creative art. So we appreciate that. Folks, if you're interested in seeing the final performance of Eric Jacobson fronting the Greater Bridgeport Symphony on Saturday, April 8th at the Klein Memorial Auditorium at 8 p.m., you simply need to get your tickets by going to gbs.org, and you can get into that show. And keep in mind the May 5th performance at St. Peter's Church in Danbury as the Greater Bridgeport Symphony goes on the road for that. Eric, best of luck to you. Thank you so much for helping us wrap up this season of your career, and hopefully we'll see you again here in the Park City.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, and really looking forward to more music all together very soon.
You've been listening to our award-winning public affairs program, For the People. The opinions expressed on this broadcast represent those of our guests and host. If you have a suggestion for an issue, a guest, or a PSA relevant to the audience and community served by our radio station, you must make a request for consideration in writing to me via email at john.voquette@connoisseurct.com. We do not accept pitches or requests for coverage by phone. Remember, no part of this program may be copied, disseminated, or rebroadcast. Our public file detailing the many critical community and state issues addressed on For the People can be reviewed upon request during normal business hours at 440 Wheeler's Farms Road in Milford or on our station website. Our theme music is by Rick Miller and Scott's, with original music by Noel Viette. I'm Director of Public Affairs, John Voquette. Join us again this time next week for more conversation and information on the award-winning For the People. And don't forget, you can listen to this and other For the People podcasts anytime on iTunes or under the podcast tab on our station's website. Until this time next week, thanks for listening.